everyone, and welcome to Minute 85 of Movie Rob Minute, daily podcast, where we take a wild trip to the 1987 John Hughes comedy, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week is Travis Bow. Welcome back, Travis.
Thank you for having me. One last leg of the journey here.
Well, you know, I figured it's pretty lonesome, so might as well do it with somebody else. Why not? And maybe I'll even get an answer we'll get an answer to Neil's question from yesterday. Who knows?
Yeah.
So minute 85 begins with Neil staring down Del and ends with Del and Neil coming to a house. Pretty simple, you know.
Yeah. Yesterday. But again, another really nicely contained minute here.
Yes, completely. I did it all for you, Travis.
Yeah, appreciate it.
So basically, yesterday we ended things with Neil finally coming to the realization that something is not correct with what's going on with Del. And he rushes back and finds Del sitting in his lonesome at the train station. And he asks the ultimate question, Del, what are you doing here? And Neil just stares at Del. And he starts walking towards him. And it's great to see that the way that John Candy plays Del, you can feel that the character is both scared and feeling uncomfortable at this moment. Yeah. You know, he's not really sure what's going on here. You know, as we mentioned yesterday that he feels like he's been caught, but here he's even, you know, scared. He's looking at his hands. And you see that his hands seem to be trembling and fidgeting and stuff like that.
Maybe a little bit embarrassed, maybe a little bit ashamed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Combination of it all.
Yeah. So what was Del going to do? You know, like that could be a question for like just this end of the journey or this entire journey. What was his goal? Where was he going? Where was he coming from? What's next? I get to this point and I'm like, doesn't seem to be. Let me back up. I think at the start of the journey, you think, oh, he's headed home to be with his wife for Thanksgiving. I think that's what Neil kind of assumes he's doing. And
right. And we assume that too.
And then now we find out his plan was to go to Chicago, but what for?
Yeah, it's a big question that we will never know the true answer to. You know, maybe he has a house somewhere and he was planning on going to his house. You know, whatever. I mean, we'll get into it a little bit with the script. Mm-hmm. The script does give us a little more details as to what's really going on. But looking at the movie face value, you know, without knowing what's in script, there's really no answer to that because he's just sitting there waiting. What is he waiting for? Is he waiting for someone to come pick him up? Is he waiting just for to decide where he wants, what hotel he wants to go to? You know, it could be anything.
It read to me a little bit like, you know, he's homeless and he has nowhere to go. And I don't get the sense that he is. I mean, we know he's living out of this trunk, but he's clean. His clothes are always clean. He's not, you know, disheveled, really.
He's not a derelict.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's so odd.
Yes, it really is. And, you know, that's, I guess it's one of the things that they want us to question these things, to ponder it and wonder where is Del actually planning on going? Or is he just waiting for Neil to come back? Yeah. But then again, he wouldn't feel as embarrassed if he was waiting for him. So, yeah, I mean, part of also, Neil then says to him, you said you were going home. What are you doing here? Okay. So, like, I wonder, what's the purpose of having this reveal? I mean, are we supposed to pity Del at this point?
I think so.
You know, because they don't give us enough information as to what's really going on here. You know, Del begins to stammer and respond. He goes, I don't have a home And then he says, Marie's been dead for 8 years. And they just leave it at that. Even when we come back on Sunday, because next week we're actually starting episodes on Sunday, we're not going to know what the answer is looking at the movie. You know, if you look at the script, it will explain a little bit more. I find it interesting that they just give us that one line. Marie's been dead for years. And that's it. No explanation, nothing. Who is he? Where is he? Where is he going? What is, you know, does he have other family? Nothing. You know, and again, I mean, this is Thanksgiving is known as the holiday, you know, where you have guests and things like that. So maybe that's part of the whole idea here is, okay, there might be someone in your life that is more lonesome than you think they are. You know, maybe that's part of the message that John Hughes was trying to give out here. I don't know. You know, but I mean, as I mentioned yesterday, this scene is just amazing because of the performances of both John Candy and Steve Martin, their body language and everything. It just,
yeah, I love the way great. Steve Martin, you know, looks down at the ground. He looks sullen. You know, he's we know that he's contemplating like, okay, I'm gonna bring Dell home with me. But I really love the way he plays that because he almost has an angry look on his face, but that's not the emotion that is there. It's just a very serious look that I really like here.
Yeah, and it goes on for like 20 seconds after Dell says that Marie's been dead. You know, they just show us shots of the two of them back and forth looking at each other, pondering, okay, what are we going to do with this situation? Where do we go from here? You know, our friendship has now taken another level. You know, is this a good level for us or a bad level? You know, I think they're like quickly trying to contemplate that type of thing. You know, I don't know. And yeah. I guess we will never really know. What because this is part of the changed ending, because this was not in the original script, which today we have a lot to talk about the script when we get to it, because there's a lot there. And then the music that we were talking about, Daryl Hall music, Every Time You Go Away, you know, we actually get a little bit of the words now. And then the scene changes and we get a shot of Neil and Dell both walking down the streets holding the steamer trunk between them. And I like the fact that Steve Martin is eagerly helping Dell with his stuff. I mean, you have Neil carrying the suitcase and Dell is carrying his briefcase. And
Neil's smiling. Like you can tell, like the scene picks up just after one of them told a joke. You know, it just seems like they've enjoyed the walk together.
Do you remember that time?
Yeah. I love this shot. The two of them walking down the middle of the street with this trunk, and it's symmetrically, it's very pleasing because they're both carrying like a satchel or a carry-on on the outside, and then they've both got the trunk, you know, between them. It's a fantastic shot. And like watching the movie, I thought the trunk is going to, you know, get destroyed. The contents are going to get, you know, scattered all about, especially the couple of like accidents that they get into on the highway, you know, just the amount of like damage this trunk takes. I just thought it was going to become a casualty like Neil's hat and his suit bag. And like, he's lost all his stuff, yet miraculously Dell has come through with all of this luggage. And I like that Dell doesn't lose this stuff, because now we've found out that this is his home. You know, this is what all of his possessions are right here being carried by these two guys. And I just really like that it survives the journey. And I don't like when movies say like, oh, Gotham City is a character. You know, a city is a character. New York, it's a character. This trunk kind of feels like a character in this movie, you know? So I really like that it survives the journey. And here Neil is gladly helping bear the load, share the load.
Yeah. I think also that the trunk, and I this is the first time it actually just hit me as we're talking about this. I think the trunk is also analogous to Dell. You know, he's big and he can take a beating and he still, you know, it still stays the same and moves along.
Yeah.
You know, as much of the verbal beating and physical beating that Dell has taken here, you know, he hasn't changed. He's the same person he was before. He's still the happy-go-lucky guy. You know, he might be lonely, but he still he's still the ever optimist in everything that he does. You know, I think that's great. And then we get a shot of them from behind as they start walking up towards Neil's house. Okay, so I actually did a little bit of research about the house to see if it was a real house or not, and it turns out it was, or it is. It was actually put up for sale in 2012, and it was sold for nearly $1.8 million. It's a house that was built in 1917. Okay. It has 6 bedrooms, 4 bathrooms, a library, and a sunroom. And it's located at 230 Oxford Road, Kenilworth, Illinois. And apparently the entire neighborhood has some really nice houses based on what I saw.
Yeah. Everything I found about this house, or I kept seeing, like, is this the Home Alone house?
And it's not.
You know, and apparently it's similar. Two different houses. Yeah. They look very similar.
Yeah. So. Now I like the fact that it's basically, you know, you see that there are lights on in the house. And when they were walking down the street, you saw some of the street lights were on also. So basically we're getting towards dusk, you know, which you would think might be a little late for him because, you know, he needs to get there by the end of the football game. And the football game, if I remember correctly, the football game usually started at 11 a.m. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Not really sure. Maybe they start later. Maybe I'm wrong. That I don't remember.
Is the football game line, is that only in the script?
No, well, there was a football game. No.
Or do they establish
there was a football game, which we discussed when they were in the first motel. Okay, but I'm talking about the football game on Thanksgiving. They're not talking about the football game on Thanksgiving. But we'll get there. And today's script does mention it, so we'll talk about that. So did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
A little bit, but the minute, but more just overall with the movie. Is Dell actually employed by a shower ring sales company, or is that just, I don't know why it occurred to me, like, is he legitimately employed by this company selling shower rings, or is he going motel to motel, stealing the shower rings from there and then selling them, and that's how he's grifting his way across the country?
I think that's a great idea, but I believe that Dell is the genuine article.
Okay.
I don't think he's doing that. I think he really does work for them. So yeah, that's what I think. Okay. But that's a great theory. No question about that. So every day I talk about the differences between the script and the final cut of the film. We actually have, I think, 5 pages. Or actually, we have more than that. We have 5.5 pages of script that are not in the movie. So I'm going to quickly go through them because I don't want to, you know, drag it out too much. But basically, the first thing we get is an extended scene in the train station between Dell and Neil. Now, remember everyone who was listening yesterday, when in the original script, it's a different bus terminal or train, it's different train station because Dell has jumped ahead, taken a taxi to surprise Neil and show up there. So, you know, it starts off where it ended. Yesterday's part of the script ended with Dell, what are you doing here? And then it says, Dell looks away. Neil walks over to him Dell looks up at him. He doesn't say anything. Then Neil says, you said you were going to Homewood. What are you doing here? And he goes, I don't live in Homewood. He says, I'm not getting into this, Dell. I don't know what you're up to, but I'm going home. Dell nods. He's serious and somber. The old enthusiasm and bullshit has evaporated. Neil heads to the doors. He starts to exit, stops. A long beat, and he kicks the door. God damn it. Dell jumps from the sudden noise. Neil turns to him. Go ahead, Neil. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be here. You're right, Dell. I don't know what the deal is with you, but you ought to be home. I ought to be home. I don't understand you. I don't understand any of this. I've said goodbye to you 10 times in 2 days. I know. Go on home. I'm fine. Don't give me that shit, Dell. Why don't you go home? Dell looks at the floor. Dell doesn't answer. What's the matter with you? Why the hell don't you go home? I can't. What do you mean you can't? Why not? There's a long pause. Serious, dying in, waits for a response, holds his anger at bay, looks away, looks back. I don't have a home. The anger fades on Neil to be replaced by confusion. Dell looks at Neil. Sorry, he's burdened him. Sorry for everything he's done, but lost and down and completely out of emotional options. Marie's been dead for 8 years. Like a knife through Neil's heart. Then it says, Dell and Neil are sitting on facing benches. Dell's smoking. She was sick when we got married. She just never got better. Once she was gone, I sold the house. I didn't feel much like being there. My life was empty enough as it was. I couldn't handle the thought of rambling about the place without Marie there. So I just closed it up, took a few things, and I've been on the road ever since. The trunk? Dell reaches into his pocket and comes up with a key. He unlocks the trunk and opens it. The remnants of Dell's domestic life. A lamp, some sheets, towels, pictures, a couple pans, fragile things wrapped in newspaper. Neil leans back from the trunk. He closes the lid. I don't have much family. A brother in Montana, some cousins. Marie's folks died back to back the year after we married. They were pretty old. She was a late child. We didn't get the chance to have our own kids. She wanted three, two boys and a girl. He smiles sadly. I number about 300 motels as my home. I sort of attach myself to people from time to time, like with you, especially around the holidays. I can take it in March, July, October. I don't mind it, but it gets hard around this time of year. I've never had much of a chance to be a family man, but it gets really hard. And you know what it is? Neil shakes his head. He's about to cry. I don't get to give any of myself to anybody. It's not the getting I miss, it's the giving. I sat on the plane with you and I thought about you heading home to be with your people. And Tuesday night when you were in the shower and I looked at the pictures of your kids, man, I thought you gotta be the luckiest man on earth to go home and put those little guys on your knee and hug them and kiss them. I'm 39 years old and I never had that and I never will. I'm sorry about all this. I just kind of lost control this time. Every year since Marie's been gone, I've gotten closer and closer to losing it. Usually I head for a church. I can feel like I'm part of something when I'm in a church. This time, I guess I didn't get to the church fast enough. I just couldn't let go. He looks at his watch. I vowed I'd never burden anybody with this, and I broke my vow. Held you away from your family. I caused you a hell of a lot of trouble. You better run. Neil stares at the floor, devastated by Dale's story. I'm going to head back downtown. He stands up. I know the firm you work for. I read your business card. I've kept a sort of tab on what I owe you, and I'll get it all back to you. And I just want to say, in 15 years on the road, I never met a nicer guy than you. And that comes straight from my heart. God bless you, buddy. A few more like you, and the planet will be in good shape. He lifts one end of the trunk and picks up the suitcase and sample case. When I give my thanks, it's going to be for meeting you. He starts to drag the trunk back to the platform. Neil looks up, looks at Dell. Same here. Dell stops. He looks at Neil, gives him a wink, and continues across the station. And that's the way that pretty much ends. It gives us so much more insight into the character. There's no question about that. It's done really well. I'm on the fence as to whether it's needed in the movie. It's great to know, but it
There's a lot
maybe
there.
too much.
I even wrote down like what's in the trunk. I wondered why there isn't a moment where they have a discussion about like, hey, what's in this thing? But then I just assumed, well, they don't have a moment like that, so it must just be his clothes, his, you know, his personal effect. I didn't didn't expect there to be a lamp and, right. you know,
I mean, we know there's a picture and a pillow.
I just
that's all we know.
Yeah, yeah. But man, that's yeah. I'm glad they didn't do that. All of that.
But it's nice to know.
And the information about the information about how he and Marie got together, and it was kind of a short, you know, short time together. Like that's pretty good.
Yeah, I guess they couldn't figure out how to you know keep parts of this in, so they decided just to take it all out.
Yeah. I don't like that it does paint the picture that Del is kind of right. parasite's the wrong word, but this idea that he latches on to people during his travels and that he's here because he's his latest, you know, I don't know, companion is Neil. Yeah, it makes it like we were talking about yesterday, where he's met him, you know, ahead of where on Neil's journey, and like he's waiting for him. Like that makes it creepier.
Yeah, definitely. So. And then the script goes along a little further and gives us some more insight as to what's going on in the house. Okay, it says the football game's just ended. Neil's father-in-law Martin and his father Walt are in the family room watching the TV, which is interesting that they say it this way, because in the movie, we'll talk about this next week, it's switched. Neil's father's name is Martin, and his father-in-law's name is Walt. So here it's the other way. A two-year-old boy, Seth, is asleep in Walt's arms. A six-year-old girl, Marty, is on the floor combing her My Little Pony's hair. A five-year-old boy, little Neil, is sharing a chair with Martin. I'm telling you, the Lions never fail to disappoint. They won, for God's sakes. It was a squeaker, Walt. If they win, it's always a squeaker. And then little Neil says, what's a squeaker? You just watched one. I did, and I didn't even know it. And then, so I did a little bit of research as to, you know, I grew up in Detroit, so I remember that on Thanksgiving, there always was a Lions game on Thanksgiving. And I was wondering, okay, where did that come from? So when the NFL was created in 1920, right, they always had played games on Thanksgiving, but it wasn't a specific team. You know, they would always have a Thanksgiving Day game. So in 1934, the owner of the Lions, George Richards, he began a tradition to have Thanksgiving Day games in Detroit as a gimmick to get people to go to the Lions games. And you know, he at this point was able to also, he owned a radio station, WJR, which is a major affiliate of the NBC Blue Network, which is what's now known as ABC. And he was able to negotiate an agreement for them to carry the Thanksgiving games live across the entire country. And so it just stuck. You know, since then, there have been the Dallas Cowboys now apparently also have a game every year. Since 1966, they play on Thanksgiving. And then there's a third game that's always played, but that's not one to any specific teams. You know, they just have a third matchup, you know, against rivals or something like that. So I found it interesting. Now, I also looked up on this particular day what happened with the Lions game. Okay, because so they played Kansas City Chiefs on November 26th, 1987, and the Chiefs actually won the game 27-20. So once again, they were incorrect in their prediction here, because the Lions did not win. They lost, and they, you know, to say that this was a squeaker, I don't know. I'm not that much of a football fan, but in the first quarter, the Chiefs led 7-0. The second quarter, the Chiefs led 17-10. Third quarter, sorry, they got 17 more points. And the Lions got 10 points. In the third quarter, the Chiefs got 3 points and the Lions got 3 points. And in the fourth quarter, the Lions got another 7 points. So the final score was 27-20. So I don't know if you would call that a squeaker, but, you know, it's still fun to have that little, the little conversation between the older generation about the game, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see who the Lions played and did they win in 86? Like maybe when this script was being written and they're maybe basing it off
that is
of
possible.
That previous
That's
year.
Actually a very interesting thing to check up, and we will have to check that up. That's actually a great idea. Then we get another short little conversation between Susan and her mother-in-law. You know, they're in the kitchen. So it says, Neil's wife, Susan, is finishing a relish tray. Her mother, Joy, is stirring gravy, and her mother-in-law, Peg, is whipping mashed potatoes with an egg beater. Then Sue says, for all I know, Neil could be splattered all over some highway. So Peg shuts off the egg beater. It's her son. Are you just trying to upset me? Of course not. And then she says to her daughter, last time he called, he said what? He said he and this Del Griffith person were in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Martin and I have friends in Oconomowoc, the Kudners. Their boy's a state trooper. So the state trooper that we saw last week, that was played by Michael McKean. That's actually his name, Kudner, in the script. Okay. So it's pretty funny that they mentioned that, you know, that Neil's parents actually know this guy's parents, you know, his parents. So I thought that's pretty funny that they would do that. And then she says, I think he's full of crap. He said the rental car burned up. He said he got robbed. He and this Del Griffith. Who's Del Griffith? Some guy he met at the airport in New York. And that's it. Again, it's a scene that's not needed. It doesn't really add anything, but it's still fun to actually have it in here. So the football game on Thanksgiving in 1986 between the Lions and the Green Bay Packers. The Packers won 44-40. This was close. This was actually very close. This does sound like a squeaker, because in the first quarter, the Packers got 13 points and the Lions got 10. Second quarter, 10 and 10. Third quarter, 7 and 17. And then the fourth quarter, the Packers got 2 touchdowns. So they got another 14 points. And the Lions only got 3. So they actually won in the fourth quarter. So there you go. It's that squeaker. Thank you for giving me the idea to check that out.
Sure.
All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Weekend Candy, where my guest gives their top 5 John Candy performances. So what do you think of John Candy's performances, Travis?
I will say in number 5, the first half of Stripes. I think the first half is really good. I think the second half is just pretty much meh.
I think it's more than just the first half. It's the first segment, I would say. You know, up until they get out of basic training,
Number 4, The Great Outdoors. Number 3, National Lampoon's Vacation. Number 2, The Rescuers Down Under. And number 1, Home Alone. Yeah. I will say I did enjoy this movie, and it was just kind of a movie that I have a cousin who showed me parts of this movie, and maybe we started to watch it but couldn't finish it, but I don't really remember the beginning of the movie. I just kind of remember, you know, brief segments of it. So I don't think I've ever watched it, you know, in one sitting, even as a kid, but no, watching it now, like I'm glad I did. I do enjoy it. So I get why people, you know, watch it every year for around Thanksgiving. I could see this being your go-to Thanksgiving holiday movie. Not that there are a lot, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Not many to choose from, but yeah. you still got them. Every day we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, where either myself or my guest will give a little adventure or misadventure of something that happened to us during the journey of life. So, Travis, do you got another story for us?
I do. So we were some friends. We were staying in a cabin in, I think we were in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and we decided to go on one of these, like, oh, we'll go down to the river, we'll get into some inner tubes, we'll just, you know, cruise down the river. We've got another tube for our cooler, like an inflatable cooler, so we can just drink and have fun, just being kind of floating down the river all day. And so we get there, we get in the water. Instantly, my wife loses a sandal. So in trying to get to the sandal, I lose one of my flip-flops, but I get her sandal back. Mm. And so then we start down the river. It's very low. Apparently it hasn't rained, you know, for 2 weeks or whatever. We find out that, you know, no one should have been on this river really, because it was just too low. And so we end up having to walk most of the river. It's like 3 mile, you know, trip down river before they pick you up a couple miles down the river a couple hours later or whatever. Over the course of the journey, I end up losing my other sandal. I lose my shirt. I'm walking this riverbed that's mostly dry. There were segments of it that we were able to get on our inner tubes and float, you know. But I end up, yeah, like I said, just walking most of this trip over, you know, uneven river rocks, and finally get to the end of this journey. And because it took us so much longer, you know, the van that like dropped you off at the start of the river and is supposed to pick you up down river so many hours later, they just left. We weren't there. They left. Yeah. So we have to walk a mile to the nearest place with a phone. We call the place to, hey, come pick us up, that sort of thing. And by this time, I'm white hot with anger. Yeah, no, my wife and our friends are like, no one talk to Travis right now. Just he needs some alone time. Yeah, it was probably one of my most like rage filled, you know, just hate, just white hot rage at this trip that we took. So no more, you know, river trips for this guy.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing that with us, even though it brings up the Incredible Hulk inside of you.
Yeah, yeah, we call that trip River Rage. So
okay, makes sense.
Yeah,
makes sense. Okay, great. Thank you very much, Travis.
No, yeah.
So you want to once again for the final time tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can find me on Real Comic Heroes. That's my comic book movie podcast. You can find me on Marvel Events Timeline. That's my Marvel Comics podcast. Or you can find me on Watchmen Minute. That's my Movies by Minutes project on Zack Snyder's Watchmen. So you can find me all those places. You can hear me on guesting on fine shows like this one. You know, I'm around.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. All you do is a quick search for Movie Rob Minute, and you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, or you can go to our website. So thank you very much, Travis. I appreciate having you on this week. It's been a lot of fun. Been educational for me. Hopefully for you too.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, and thank you for introducing this movie to me.
Well, do you have any more insight about the movie that since you saw it for the first time? Anything else? Any other comments about the movie itself?
Yeah, it definitely didn't go the way I thought it was going to go in certain places. You know, it obviously the movie sets up a few things that, like with the wife, not the specific thing with the wife, but overall, like I kind of got where the journey was going, but there were definitely some surprises. But yeah, overall, I really enjoyed it.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very much. Just a reminder to everybody, next week we will actually have 8 days of this show. We're going to go from Sunday to Sunday right before – so we finish up the movie, and then after that we'll begin season three. So keep your eyes and ears open for what season three is going to be. Most people don't know, and I mean, I know Travis knows, but
– Yes, I do.
Hopefully he'll return for season three to talk with us about a different movie. You know, over the course of those 8 days, we have 4 different guests. So it's going to be a fun week. So until Sunday, you're fine.
You're fine.